Hi, Rand. How much competition is there for licensing products? Are the big players in the industry locking up all rights across all product categories, or is there still room for the little guy to license well-known properties? Also, can you briefly discuss if upfront fees are usually required? If so, any ballpark figures?
So let's start with the first one, competition for licensed products. The answer is there's always competition. And in licensing, because of the breadth and depth of the different types of properties that are out there. You have entertainment-based, you have brands, you have art, you have video game-based technology. You've got a variety of licensed products out there. There is quite a bit of competition out there. You know, one of the keys for licensing any product, especially if it's a consumer product, is getting it to retail. That's probably where there is more of a competitive issue with finding shelf space or distribution outlets for licensing products. But with that said, the good news is there is demand for licensed products. And, you know, that leads us nicely into the second part of the questions about the big players locking up the rights across all product categories. Let me comment on this in a couple of phases. You really have to look at the type of licenses in terms of the categories. If you want to talk about entertainment, some of these big movie properties, yes, you've got all the major companies in there, the toys and the apparel companies and things like that, and they have obviously an opportunity to lock up all those rights. But let me comment on this and say, while they do get rights to a broad spectrum of products within the product categories, they can't take everything because these companies can't produce everything. It's an interesting question. When I was in the studio side, we used to put together big deals with the major toy manufacturers, and as large as they were, they did not control the toy category. They got a significant amount of toys, but there was still plenty of room for a lot of the second and third tier companies, even entrepreneurs who were able to come in with either proprietary products or special niches. I mean, one thing to understand about licensing, if you've got a proprietary product, let's say you're an inventor or your company has a product that you have acquired through an inventor or something, if it's proprietary, that is an opportunity, if it's a consumer product, to look at going after rights for some of these significant entertainment brands or retail brands or consumer brands out there. So although the big players do have an opportunity to lock up significant rights, they don't get them all, and there is an opportunity for even the small guy to get in there. And I think that kind of leads into the third part of the question, is there room for the small guy and license the well-known properties? The answer is yes. Both the retailers and especially the licensors are always looking for new innovative products. So if you are the small guy and you have a new innovative product, absolutely I encourage you, pick up the phone, give them a call, look to acquire that license because that's what they're looking for. And as far as upfront fees, it's an interesting question. The fees just run such a scale that there is no one set fee that you could be looking at. Now, one of the things that I coach my clients on, I say, look, you know, licensing is about a partnership, and what you really want to do is open the door. If you initially go into these deals and you want all of these product categories up front, it can be a very expensive license. But if you go in with an understanding of saying, look, if we can open the door, go in with our one or two key items, and basically just take a small bite, you can get in a very low figure. I mean, deals that have been put together, these license deals, whether it's for an entertainment property, a TV property, a consumer brand, a retail brand, maybe artwork, can run you anywhere from nothing down to literally hundreds of thousands of dollars in terms of upfront fees. And the trick is how you're making your presentation and what you're going after. I've done many deals for clients at the studio level where we've gotten these deals put together for as little as $2,500 and $5,000 down. I have other deals that I put together with some of the major sports licensing franchise that are six-figure deals. So it all depends. But keep in mind, too, when you do licensing, depending on the organizations you're dealing with, the larger, more sophisticated organizations, the bigger studios, sports franchises, things like that, they may have set fees in place, in which case there isn't much that you're going to be able to work around because they have certain minimums that they require across the board regardless of the company. In other cases, there are opportunities that you can go into and you can find these licenses and acquire these licenses for little or, in some cases, nothing down. So I haven't given you a lot of numbers on this only because it's hard to pinpoint something like that.
Rand, how can I get a fast start in the international licensing business and avoid legal pitfalls at the same time without paying an arm and a leg for expensive lawyers or having to find them first?
Well, depending on what you want to do in licensing, I mean, licensing is international just by its very nature. Intellectual property is international. Now, if you're looking to start up internationally outside the United States, the fastest way and some of the biggest opportunities for licensing international are basically reaching out, whether you want to go consumer products, entertainment, and in some cases, you know, if you're looking to take a U.S. property outside the United States, you have an opportunity there, but obviously you have to have an infrastructure in place if you want a fast start international, and here this question is really defined by whether you want to operate internationally or in the U.S., is start with a small license. Have a single product, for example. Maybe you have a product, maybe you know of a product, maybe you can partner, find an inventor. You know, one of the fastest way to get into licensing, whether it's international or domestic, is if you can partner with an inventor who's got a very cool consumer product. I'm picking on inventors here because many times they're very good at creating these new inventions, new products, but they don't have the business savvy. And so as you listen to this, if you are an entrepreneur or business owner, you've got the business skills, the marketing savvy, partner up with them, because if you can acquire their proprietary or work out either a license agreement or a partnership with them and you have something proprietary that you've got, you're in a position to go out and acquire a license around it. For instance, I had a toy company that came to the United States. They were looking for a quick way. How could we quickly ramp up and get into the United States market? And the fastest way they could do it, and I talked to them about it, is instead of establishing your own brand, why don't you go and license some major kids brands that have been out there for 10 or 15 years. And by that I mean that we went and we took their products, and instead of them spending the money to promote it and distribute it and run all the advertising, we went out and acquired some of the big kids brands like Wiggles and Thomas the Tank, and we wrapped those around the product, and that immediately gave the company access into retail distribution, customer recognition, meeting with buyers, and ultimately sales. And the difference is instead of spending 2 to 3 years trying to establish themselves in the United States, in less than 18 months, we'd acquired the licenses, been in meetings with retail, and had products at retail being sold in less than 18 months at a fraction of the cost. And that's the fastest way that you can start in the licensing business, whether it's international or domestic. By the way, many times you can go look for international rights to big U.S. properties because they're sometimes easier to get because of the nature of the international market being smaller. So that's another way that you can get it. And as far as the legal pitfalls go, really what you're talking about is when you're acquiring licenses, you're talking about a legal contract. So the legal pitfalls you really get into is not understanding what you sign. My suggestion is always, you can get the contract. You don't necessarily have to have attorneys right there at the time of the negotiations. You can negotiate yourself, and you don't necessarily need an attorney to negotiate. You could use an agent such as myself. But at the end of the day, I always recommend that if you do get a contract, it's always best to pay for the services of a good IP attorney just to read through it and make sure you understand everything that's in there before you sign off. And by the way, I should mention, too, as we talk about this question in particular, but a number of the others, we had a great interview that we had done, Michael, that we had talked about specific case studies where I shared with you different stories of actual manufacturers and inventors who I had worked with in putting license deals together. And this is a great piece for any of your listeners out there. They really should go back and listen to those case studies because they're very informative, but also there's nothing like a case study to really give you specifics about what these companies did and how they performed and how they're able to go out and acquire these licensing rights and what the results were.
Rand, where are some of the best places to source intellectual property that may be underexploited or under the radar that most people never really consider?
Great question. You know, licensing is all about trends, what's happening out there. And what I always recommend to anybody looking to licensing is to use the internet. The internet's a great tool. You can source what is going on out there. And if you're looking for licensing, look for trends. There's a couple of great websites you can go to, trendhunter.com, springwise.com. Those are two great sources, and they're trend sites. They're trends in business, they're trends in social, they're trends in media. And start searching through those. See what's going on. That's one way you can do it. You can use searches on Google where you can find out what terms are being searched on a weekly or a monthly basis. That's also another good tool to use, is find out what people are looking for. What are the big search terms? It's all about trends. Many times there's licensing opportunities that nobody's heard of, and then suddenly they come out of nowhere, and people say, where did these come from? And what it has, it's been a trend that's building. This holds true for entertainment. This holds true for finding properties that are just being launched on television, early stage movies, perhaps new entertainment properties that are coming up through the internet. Video games, great source to find new upcoming properties, and a lot of these could be niche. By the way, you don't always have to find the big home run. There's a lot of great niche properties out there, but keep in mind, if you can latch onto them early through doing some search on the internet, a great way. And also, too, keep in mind, when we talk about underexploited, because it's a good question, a lot of times you can look at some of these major brands, and you may have an idea for a category that they're not in. That's also another way to look at underexploited. Just because a brand is very prominent out there doesn't mean that they've captured or been involved in every category that's out there. And this is important to keep in mind. If you have an idea and if you think that you know of something, like I always say, pick up the phone, talk to them about licensing, ask about licensing, because you never know until you ask. You know, sometimes it's interesting. You can find a game, a TV show, a property, and you call up and you ask them, would you be interested in licensing? And if the response is, well, I never thought about it or I don't understand, right there you've got an opportunity. Now, if the question is from them, they want to understand about it, then you've got an opportunity to make a proposal, a presentation, contact somebody such as myself and say, look, I've got an opportunity here and I need somebody to go in and make a presentation. These are all good signs. So you make a good point, Michael, in the fact that if an inventor or an organization or an entertainment project doesn't understand licensing and you've asked the question, that's indicative of a possibility of a really great licensing opportunity.
Can you shed some light on like all the different types of licensing? Like with some of my students, let's say someone wants to create an information product and they want to market online. I say, well, go look in the classified ads and see who's selling stuff through direct mail, because many of these people may not be online and you can negotiate just an exclusive online license. Or there may be an inventor with a product or some IP that's international selling very good, but they may not be in the United States and you can negotiate just a U.S. only license. Can't you license territory? Whatever you can imagine. It could be state by state, it could be three states, it could be international, it could be anything that's not competing with the existing marketing of what they're doing right there.
That's a really great point, and especially with information products. You know, it's interesting because I'm working on a business process licensing workshop, and it's about this very issue. Many service-based businesses today are information-based businesses, and they don't realize that they have intellectual property that can be licensed into different channels, different markets, different customer bases. And if you are looking to find an information-based product, your suggestion about looking into classified ads to find out where they're marketing, this is an excellent suggestion. It's a great way to do research, especially for information or knowledge-based businesses that are delivering this information, because they do have certain distribution channels, and you're absolutely right. Licensing is very flexible. You can license by distribution channel, regional territory, geographic territory, per capita basis, international, domestic, literally down to the zip codes if you wanted to, if that was appropriate. And these all present opportunities because there's a product that may be out there that is very well known, let's say in the publishing world, let's say through the book channels. That doesn't mean that it precludes any other opportunities. You may be able to look at it and say, well, geez, how about online? How about direct response? I mean, there's many times when these owners of this information or these business processes, marketing systems, they're very good at one channel of distribution, but there's many other ways that could be used to deliver or leverage that content. And if you identify that, by all means, pick up the phone, say, hi, I see your product. I'm interested in licensing it. Have you thought about XYZ channel? And right there, you may have an open door to a licensing opportunity.
Okay, great. How do I make an idea marketable for licensing and actually get paid on it?
That's a great question. One of the first things to understand about ideas to make it marketable for licensing, obviously it has to move from an idea to become an intellectual asset known as an intellectual property, a trademark, copyright, or patent. And by the way, I'd mentioned know-how. There's know-how, trade secrets, confidential information, that's all intellectual property. Some of it is registered, such as patents, trademarks, and copyrights. Others of it is what's called non-registered intellectual property. Know-how, trade secrets, business processes, business systems, marketing systems. Okay, those are non-registered, but they're still intellectual property. I've been talking about the fact that you had both registered and non-registered entertainment intellectual property. Now, the key here is you have to move it from that concept, that idea, and you have to create value for it. And that's usually done by delivering it to the market in some form. Test markets, limited sales, delivering and using the information. Whatever the case is you're creating a market for it. You're proving value for it. You're proving that a customer wants to use it, a business wants to use it, that people will buy and pay for it. And you're demonstrating that it does have value, that it sells for the price, and that companies get results and there's demand for it. Essentially, what you're doing is you're proving demand for it. Once you do that, you've produced what's called the marketability. And once you get to the point of marketability, now you're ready to start licensing, because the key in licensing here is the more marketable that you can develop your intellectual property in, the better and stronger opportunities you're going to have for licensing. And that's when you're going to get paid, okay?
Let me just regress a little bit. Okay, so let's say someone's listening to it and they're saying, well, how do I prove marketability if I don't have the license to it? So give me like an example of something, a product or an IP that I can prove marketability, then go and approach for the license. How would that work?
Well, depending on what you want to do, let's say you own the intellectual property. Let's say you've created the new product or the information.
I own it already.
All right, you own it already, and let's say you've got a new product that you've invented, you're ready to go out. So what you have to do, basically, is you have to invest the time and money to create and build the product and take it to market. And by that, I mean it has to establish itself there and prove that somebody's going to buy it and pay for it. Now, you don't have to do this in a large scale at all. You could do it online, for example.
And this is without any license.
This is where you own the IP, and you're building what's called marketability for it. You're creating a market for your intellectual property. And that then, in turn, gives you an opportunity to license it. Now, on the other side of the coin, let's say you are looking to license something. You are looking to license, and you find an inventor, you find an information product. The marketability, then, is an interesting opportunity for you because you can use the marketability in your negotiation. So let's say, for example, I approach you, Michael, and say, you know, I really like the information products you've been doing. Have you thought about the direct response channel into Hispanic homes? Say, no, I've never done it. I say, well, I'll tell you what, I'd be interested in doing a licensing deal, but what I'd like to do is structure this licensing deal in kind of a 2 or 3 stage process where the first stage is you give me the rights to do a test market to find out if, in fact, this is marketable. If it is, from there, I have an option with you to take this into a licensing agreement that gives me the exclusive rights into the Hispanic market for your product.
Okay, that's nice. So you tie it up, kind of like an option to buy.
You can actually do an option to license. And this is the strategy I was telling you about. And that's from the marketing. That's if you're looking to prove the marketability of something that's already out there into another channel or market or customer base that you think. You can actually write your agreement as an option to license.
Without any money down?
With no money down, because you're saying, look, you know, it's going to be my time and energy and money to go out and see if this is marketable. And if it is, then I'm going to be able to convert this option over into an exclusive license based on XYZ terms.
Do the big boys do that?
All the time.
There's probably no standard time length of an option, or is there?
Well, there could be. I mean, obviously, to get an option on a license is a very interesting strategy that we're touching on. There could be. It's generally tied to some kind of performance event, that something's going to be done at some point. Perhaps it's something that says, okay, you have 12 or 24 months to prove out this, that your option will automatically expire if not exercised by X date. Okay, and so that's one way it's going. Or perhaps it's tied strictly to a test market that has to be deliver X amount of money. So as opposed to a timeline, perhaps it says if it can prove out and deliver at least $500 or $1,000 or $1 million in sales, then it will convert to a longer-term license agreement.
Now, you go into this in detail in some of your products, right?
Oh, yes, I do. It's licensing mastery in particular. I get into a lot of the details of how these license agreements work, how they're actually put together, how you construct it, how you identify it. A lot of the topics that we're covering here, these questions, which are excellent questions, you can also, through the licensing mastery, actually learn the nuts and bolts, the application of what is done in licensing beyond just what we talk about here in the specific context of the question, but also how you carry it through into the actual license, how you execute it into the market, how you create this value that we've been talking about. You know, the nice thing about licensing is when we talk about licensing, for any listener out there, understand that it's what I call a two-way street. You can either license in, meaning that you have a company or you have an idea for a way to market a product and you can acquire the rights, or you can be that intellectual property owner and license out. And then there's another strategy that I talk about in licensing mastery where you can actually acquire the rights and then turn around and license them out under a sub-licensing deal, which is another strategy that you have. So you really see a lot of flexibility of what you can do with licensing.
How can a small company approach these big companies and get a deal? It seems like we got a lot of questions from small guys who think the big guys are too big to do business with.
That's a good question. You're never too small to do business with the big guys if you know how to approach them correctly. And, you know, the one thing that you don't want to do, even if you're a raw startup, you don't want to approach them as a startup. You know, where I've seen more companies fall down is they go in with what I call this startup mentality. Here I am as a startup and I want this license. You got to keep in mind, you know, the fastest way to build a startup is through licensing. Many people don't realize this. You can be a raw startup, but the moment you acquire a license, an intellectual property, you've got an asset on your balance sheet that can be valued, depending on the nature of that brand or that invention, but you've got an asset on the balance sheet. You can literally take your startup from zero to be worth several hundreds or millions of dollars by acquiring an intellectual property because it becomes an asset.
Hey, what about even if you've landed an option and you haven't put any money down?
Well, if you have an option, you still created quick value for a startup.
Could you put that on the balance sheet?
Well,
an option?
Not really, because the option isn't a license agreement. You haven't locked up a contract that
okay.
gives rights to an intellectual property. But okay. nonetheless, it does create more value because you have an option on it. And you know, this is interesting. This is what I talk about in my licensing leverage product. is this very strategy. This is one of many strategies that small businesses can use, but it's a very effective one for startups. One is to go out and acquire an intellectual property onto your balance sheet. You can do many things with it. You can value it. You can get financing against it. There's companies that will give you advances. There's many strategies you can do. The other thing I talk about is sources of where you can find intellectual property, and I have another program that I put out called University IP, the $1 billion Startup Secret. If you're a startup and you're looking to acquire some intellectual property, universities have billions of dollars of intellectual property just sitting on their books waiting for a startup to show up, and in many cases you can get it for no money down, and many businesses don't even realize this.
Are there websites that list the different stuff available, or do the universities list them online?
You know, many people don't understand that universities develop these intellectual properties as a result of their undergraduate and graduate programs. And also, too, many people don't realize in this country, and, you know, I brought this up in my newsletter, a lot of people have asked, you know, we're in challenging economic times. What happened to all the stimulus money that supposedly went out there? Many people don't realize that billions of dollars in that stimulus money went into the universities around the country. They went out and they brought that money in under research grants and a number of other programs that went into these graduate and undergraduate programs. And they did it for a number of reasons, primarily to keep their own revenue base. But what the end result of that is they're continuing to develop these enormous banks of intellectual property. Now, you understand that universities don't commercialize intellectual property. They develop it. They patent it, they trademark it, they copyright it, they prove it out, but they don't commercialize it. And what happens is it sits in their intellectual property vault. Now, some universities, you can literally go onto their website, you can find their technology transfer office, and you can find a listing of intellectual properties. And other universities do not have any representation, and literally you have to call them up and work your way through finding out if they have intellectual property for license. But they're a gold mine. What I created and why I created the University IP, the $1 billion Startup Secret, is so that small businesses, startups, entrepreneurs that are looking for a fast way to get intellectual property and build a business can access this University IP that's sitting there. So I take you through this program, shows you exactly how to go and acquire a university intellectual property for little or no money down.
Give me an idea, like how and why all this technology and these inventions get produced. You have the students who come there, and this is part of their core curriculum, is to work on and develop and do the research, part of working their way through school, and through doing that, they come up with amazing ideas and inventions?
That's a lot of it. I mean, many people don't realize, when you think about these universities, you've got technology universities, engineering, agricultural, chemical. If you think about the diversity of intellectual property that's out there, what happens is these universities, through the educational curriculum, have their students working on research. And in many of these graduate programs, these are not just theoretical projects that they're working on. They get approached by many inventors and even corporations, by the way. This is what I talk about in that, too. You know, many corporations have research projects that are submitted to the universities, and they actually have the graduate students working on that. Now, it's interesting, and here's another thing that's in the University IP program that I put together. If you have a technology, whether it's software, engineering, electronics, whatever it is, that is significant enough or large enough, you can actually go to a university with that and have them develop the R&D on it. And it wouldn't cost you anything because you are allowing them to use it as part of the curriculum for the graduate students or undergraduate, depending on it. Now, the drawback, if you want to look at a drawback, is it takes longer to R&D it, research and develop it, than it would if you were to do it yourself, simply because it would operate during the time that the students are in class. But I'm based in New York, and I had a gal we worked on actually getting a license from Columbia University. And just so that the listeners understand, what we did is we called up Columbia University, found their technology transfer office, and said, do you do license? They said, yes. And they said, okay, what category would you like? And we said, okay, consumer products. 2 weeks later, we got an email, and in it was a PowerPoint presentation with 12 different consumer product technologies that they had developed, what the product is, who invented it, how it works, and what's available for license. And so from there, we narrowed it down to one technology and went in to negotiate the rights for that technology.
Did she get it?
Ultimately, we did not get the technology because it didn't pan out to what she thought it was going to be. But I will tell you what happened. She had developed a software program for the financial industry, and the long story short, through that introduction to Columbia University, she had stopped development on her own. She had told them about what she had and wound up now doing a deal with the university where they actually have their students working on her software for the financial industry. It's fairly sophisticated. It's going to take about 2 to 3 years, but as a result of making that inquiry, she turned it over, worked out a deal with them, said, go ahead, work work on it and then work the deal out where she's going to have the rights to license it once the university has completed the development on it.
So let's say out of those 12 in the PowerPoint, let's say she did see something that she really wanted. Like what kind of deal, what kind of money up front are we talking about with universities? Is that different from big Hollywood?
It's much different. Oftentimes there's no money up front.
So no money up front, and what kind of royalties?
And the royalties are pretty standard. I mean, depending on what the technology is, you're looking at 5 to 10% on average. And the interesting thing is for many of these universities, a lot of this is targeted towards startups. They're looking for startup companies. And when I say they're looking for startups, and again, I talk about this, they have the application process structured that if you are a startup, they tell you, okay, here's the information you need to provide us. Not only are they geared towards startups, but they have some amazing resources. Again, this is a fast track. You want to start a business, go out and license IP from university. Not only can you acquire the IP, they will give you human resources in the form of graduate students or undergraduate students. In some cases, you can actually get excess space that the university has. They'll give you introductions into the venture capital community as well as the local community. And you say, why would they do all this? Because it benefits the university. The university is not interested in the money per se. What they look for is the recognition and prestige that comes from a commercialized property. Many people don't realize there's a lot of technologies, Google, Netscape, Lycos, a number of these big, what are now known as big, large corporations, they all evolved out of university technology.
And that's bragging rights for universities, and then people
Absolutely.
Know about that, and it brings more students, right?
Absolutely it does. That's why they have it. But they have so much of this IP available, and so few businesses understand. And it's all geared toward the small to mid-sized companies, especially startups. There's a tremendous amount out there, so obviously you have to do your homework, but it's not a difficult process to acquire.
And then once you acquire it for almost nothing, you instantly have that credibility of the university behind you and the technology. It's like instant credibility for no money.
It's instant credibility. Plus, you'll have a lot of interest from the financial, the funding sources, because they know that if you've got a significant technology or product behind it, you've got the university. You know, it's interesting. You bring up a good point, and this is the other thing I talk about at University IP. People don't realize, you know, when you license from a university, while you're on your own, keep in mind you've got a lot more resources you can tap into, because you've got the, in some cases, the original inventor who was privy to that. They want to see the success of it. The university wants to see the success for it. So you've got a lot of resources that you can tap into, and a lot more in many cases than you can if you were to license a technology from an individual inventor.
That's powerful. What categories, Rand, are you seeing are the hottest right now for licensing deals? Is there a standard criteria to determine the potential of a licensing deal, and does each agent have his priorities?
Well, as far as the categories go, I'd say that it's really a question of the marketplace. If you're looking for the consumer product marketplace, that's really undergoing a lot of changes. And so what consumers are looking for are value. They're looking for innovation. They're looking for, you know, the latest gadgets. You're seeing a tremendous movement in the green and the eco-awareness, if you will. That's a big, big marketplace. Those are some hot categories. Any kind of technology or product that is energy saving, is good for the environment, these are all very hot categories. If you're looking at the entertainment market, again, entertainment properties, especially for kids that deal with these environmental issues and are very positive. Social responsibility is a big category. Social responsibility is a huge category right now, given what's going on in the marketplace with all the political and the economic things that are going on. That's another big licensing category. There's a lot of up-and-coming niches that are coming out of video games, online games, virtual worlds. Virtual worlds are becoming a very interesting place that are out there. Many people may not even be aware of what's going on in the virtual world industry, but that's the next evolution out of social media. Social media. You want a hot area, go to social media. Great place to find out. You're looking for trends in licensing, go log on to MySpace, Facebook, find out what people are chatting about. This is where you can get information. Those are just a couple of key areas out there. And by the way, for the listeners that might be thinking, I don't have experience in, you know, what you're talking about, Rand, or I'm a startup company, but I don't know anything about electronics or engineering, here's a tip for them. You don't have to have the experience. If you acquire the license, you can go out and bring on the people that do know how to do it. And that's one thing to keep in mind. What I try to share with people is get out of the box. Understand this. The power of licensing is you have a tool to acquire an intellectual property. Once you acquire it, it's knowing what to do with it. And the key to knowing what to do with it is you don't have to be the one that necessarily knows how to put it together or construct it or anything. You just know how to go out and find the team, the people to put together around it. You know, and I share the story, you know, Henry Ford never knew how to build a car. He just knew how to go out and find the people who knew how to build a car. And that's the same thing that exists today with intellectual property. All you have to do is have the insight, the foresight, and an understanding of what licensing is, acquire intellectual property, and you can attract the talent around you.
how does one approach or pursue someone to have them license a product? What technique? Cold calls?
Generally, it's not a cold call situation. If you have an intellectual property and you're looking to have a company license it, the best approach is obviously first you've got to do your homework. You've got to develop a licensing plan, find out what companies are in the business or similar business that you're looking to license. Then what I always recommend is engaging in whoever your potential licensees are. Trade shows are probably one of the best ways to begin the initial process, because at a trade show, you're not really in a total cold call type of situation. You can go and you can meet companies either as an exhibitor. And, you know, I talk about this in my licensing mastery program. One of the things I talk about is trade shows. And trade shows are invaluable tools. I think people really underrate them. If you're looking to open the door to licensing, I always recommend go to a trade show. You don't necessarily need to be an exhibitor, and I talk about this on both sides, being an exhibitor and an attendee. But you can go to trade shows, and if you have something to license, you can open up the doors very, very quickly, and you can do so. And it's not a cold call. Cold calling is very difficult to do. There's a lot of companies that get bombarded by cold calls. And it's also more effective than just sending an unsolicited letter. What you can literally do is you can go and meet the salespeople, the distributors, whoever the key people are, and you can talk to them, find out what the company is interested, what you're doing, seeing if it's something that's interested. And what they will do then, if you're looking for a way to make initial contact, you go to this trade show, you talk to them. You know, salespeople always love to talk, and I talk about this in Licensing Mastery. They'll give you the name of the person who considers or is responsible for looking at new licenses. And now guess what? You've got a referral into the company. So when you come back from that trade show, you can send that initial email, make that call that says, "Hi, I met Mr. Samuels at the trade show. We chatted for a few minutes. I showed him that we've got a new XYZ product or service in your category, and he thought it might be of interest to you and said you would be the person that I would need to speak with." It's as simple as that. And that's the power of trade shows, is being able to build that relation. You know, it's part of networking. And so, you know, I talk about that in Licensing Mastery as people start to think about licensing, how do they go about doing it? And trade shows are one of the most rich resources you can use that can really accelerate the process. I mean, in this day and age, it's all about time. How quickly can I get this done? And if you know how to work a trade show, whether it's to find contacts to license out to or to find licenses that you want to acquire, I recommend going to a trade show.
Okay. Here's a question. Rand, what are some of the risks involved in making money through intellectual property licensing?
Good question. You know, there's always risks involved. I think probably the most challenging risk is knowing who you're going to partner up with. Because where you don't want to be is you don't want to be involved in a deal, if you own an intellectual property, and doing a license deal with a company that you don't know about that ultimately may go into bankruptcy. Especially if you're going to work on an exclusive, because you have to understand that with intellectual property, if you issue an exclusive license and the company goes bankrupt, you can't get that license back. You can't get those rights back, even though you may put a bankruptcy clause in your contract that says if you go bankrupt, you lose the license rights. That's not how bankruptcy courts see it. It becomes an asset of the company to satisfy the creditor claims, and you would have to wait until it works through the courts and find out what creditor winds up with an assignment of that license to be able to go and try to negotiate your rights back. So first and foremost, I say, if you want to look at a risk, is knowing who you're doing business with and make sure that you put together the right kind of deal. Some of the other risks that would be involved with licensing, of course, are making sure that your contracts are properly structured so that you don't run into any ambiguities. The other big risk is if there is ever a dispute, it always comes down to the contract. If you have a contract that is very ambiguous, meaning that it's very broad in terms of some of the issues it covers, that can lead to some potential pitfalls when it comes to either clarifying issues before they become a legal situation, or if they in fact go into litigation, now you have to go through the whole thing of trying to clarify what was meant with the contract. So make sure that your legal documents are properly structured to avoid that risk.
This is the end of part one. Please continue to part two.